Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find several speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep the special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Jim.
Good evening. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm Jim.
I'm Jim.
I'm glad to be here tonight. I'll tell you a little bit about how I'm feeling tonight, and I'll go into my story. My son just passed away a week ago Wednesday, and so I'm still dealing with that emotional problem, although it has diminished. I certainly know I have to be here in these rooms to keep a handle on my emotions, because I'm the kind of person that will seek out other solutions when my emotions get out of hand. And so I am glad to be here tonight, and welcome to all the new people. We have a lot of newcomers and birthday people. Congratulations too. When I was new, they always told me the same damn thing: keep coming back, keep coming back. And my response to that was, I'm not coming back. I'm not coming back here for a couple reasons. Number one, I've got nothing in common with you people. And it's obvious to see you're way sicker than I am. I mean, I got a problem, but I'm not in your category at all. And the third excuse, if you're new, this one really worked good for me, is that I told my sponsor, anybody could see this was a program for Jewish women from Los Angeles, and then, therefore I didn't belong here, and so I didn't come back. I did not come back, and that first meeting I went to. Actually, let me back up a little so you understand where the sponsor thing's coming from. I didn't have my sponsor that directed me to OA was my sponsor in another 12-step program that I'm in. He was a medical doc. He was a physician, a medical doctor. He said, you need to go to OA. I thought, I don't need another 12-step program. I got one, that's enough. That'll take care of all my problems. It says so right in the book. I'll take care of all my problems. And that means problems related to another disease, not this one. And so I thought, I'll go to one meeting just to see just to get him off my back, basically was my thinking. So I went to a men's morning meeting where they ate breakfast during the meeting. Now, I don't know, I'm not trying to belittle this meeting, because I think it's still going, but I was appalled. I couldn't believe it. These guys were eating these huge breakfasts and during the meeting, and I thought, my God, this is, as I say, I thought, I'm just not this sick yet. And so I went back to this doctor that was sponsoring me in the program. I said, well, listen, I just don't belong in OA, because I don't identify at all with those people. They're just way different than me. And finally, I talked him out of it. And I said, what I'll do. And he was not a compulsive overeater, by the way, or anything of the sort. But I said, what I will do is I'll call. I know what they do in OA, but I'm just not going to any meetings. I'll go ahead and I'll tell you what I'm eating and my food plan, and I'll do everything they do in OA, and my recovery will just blossom. And without having to go to meetings or having to mix up with you guys. And so he bought that story. He bought it, hook, line, and sinker. And so I started doing everything you guys do here. I had a food plan. I called in my food. I did everything that I thought you guys did. And the result was absolutely nothing. Nothing happened. Because it wasn't one compulsive overeater talking to another compulsive overeater. It was a compulsive overeater talking to an alcoholic. They have no idea what the hell we're talking about. And so finally he caught on to my little program, if you call it that. And he said, listen, Jim, why don't you try to change your attitude about OA? And why don't you go back? I told you I wouldn't bring this up again, and I won't if you don't want me to. I won't bring it up again after this. And go to another meeting and change your attitude. Change your attitude about it. So I thought, all right, I'll go to another spam meeting. So I went to a meeting in Laguna Hills. And before I walked in that meeting, I thought, well, I'm going to change my attitude. I'm going to do just what he said. I'm going to change my attitude. And so I changed my attitude. I came in, I talked to people, I set up some chairs, I think I greeted some people, and all of a sudden, you guys, I just fit in. I was, you know, it completely changed my perception. I was able to identify with you. And it went so well that night that I got a sponsor. I got an OA sponsor, which is what I needed. And so by that shift in attitude, I was able to, again, come into this program and feel comfortable. So I went back and reported to my other sponsor how it had worked so well, and he was quite elated that, you know, I wouldn't be trying to con him anymore and that I was off to OA. That was 17 years ago, by the way. So I got this, he says, I sponsor another guy that's in OA, and I'm going to call him, and he'll be your OA sponsor. And I said, all right, okay, I guess that's all right. So his name was Scott Redman. Some of you may have known him here, and Scott was my first OA sponsor. And so my first day of abstinence, I talked to Scott, and he said, now, Jim, what I'm going to tell you is this, and it's very simple. Call me before you do something. Before you do something. He says, don't call me after you do it, because I can't help you then. And he says, do you think you can do that? And I said, I think I can do that. So I got up, and this would be my first day of abstinence. I did fine. Breakfast was fine. Had a beginning and end. There was a gap. Lunch was fine. Had a beginning and end. There was a gap. Came home, ate dinner. That was fine. Had a beginning and end. There was a short gap. And that usually lasted to about 8 o'clock. And I was well into my 50s when I came in here. And at 8 o'clock, I head for the kitchen. And that's just, that's my life. Always has been. So at 8 o'clock, or thereabouts, I got up and I walked right into the kitchen, and I thought, just before I did something, the thought came back to me that he had told me to call him before I was going to do something. And I thought, well, okay, I'll call him. I don't have any expectation that he could say anything that would deter me from what I was going to do. And so I called him up and I said, hey, Scott, this is Jim. I'm in the kitchen. I'm getting ready to do what I've done basically for my whole life. And I don't know what you could possibly say to me that would deter me from doing this. But I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to listen. And I don't know what he said, but it wasn't very long. And he said, but the gist of it was, at the end, he said, you better start praying. And he hung up. And I thought, well, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I can't imagine what good that could possibly do. But as long as I've gone this far with this guy, I'll pray it. And I certainly knew, I mean, I knew prayers, but the only prayer that came to my head in that evening, that first day of my abstinence, was that I said this, God, relieve me of the obsession to compulsively overeat. God, relieve me of the obsession to compulsively overeat. And I still use that prayer today sometimes. But I don't know if you'd even call it a prayer. It's just what came to my mind. And I stood in that kitchen for a few minutes, and I walked out of there, and I've been absent for 17 years since that day. Now, the interesting thing about that is this, that when I tell that story, I think people think, well, you had some kind of a spiritual experience there. And perhaps I did. Perhaps I did. No doubt I did. But there's a kind of a drawback to spiritual experiences. And the first is that they don't last very long. They only last for about a day, actually. And the other thing is you can't recreate them again. You cannot recreate them again. So having realized this, I understood that I was going to have to continue to do the things that we do here in order to stay abstinent. And so I embarked on the steps and with my sponsor, and I'd come up here. I live in Long Beach now. At the time, I lived in Laguna Beach. And I drive up here, and we go to the log cabin, I guess it is. I don't even know if that's still there. So log cabin, the kitchen sink meeting, and I'd go to that with him. And I'd go to Serenity Sunday with him, and we work the step. And so immediately my life began to change as a result of having this program, these 12 steps. And so I reported back to the doctor that was encouraging me to come here how well I was doing. And he was quite excited and wanted to hear all about it. And I told him about Scott, and I was doing well and working the steps and everything. And then I said, Paul, you know, I had been thinking this before I went over to see him, in that he was a physician, that when I was new, I diagnosed myself as being clinically depressed. I was clinically depressed. Even though I'm not a doctor, I did not go see him. And I'm sure him being a physician, he'd understand that, and that he would be more than happy to write me a little prescription for something to take care of the depression. So I went over there, and I explained that to him, and I said, I thought perhaps you could write me a prescription for something to deal with this depression. And he says, well, I don't believe in drugs. I said, you don't believe in drugs? You're a doctor. How can you not believe in drugs? He says, what I don't believe in is using drugs as the first avenue of approach. He said, there's other approaches without turning to drugs. And he said, I myself have had periods of depression when I was new and in my life. And what I have done is I use exercise to overcome that depression. And I suggest that you start exercising to deal with your depression. And I was thinking to myself, God Almighty, I'm not that depressed. But again, I was willing to do what he suggested. And so at that point in time, I was 255 pounds thereabouts. I'd had at least two heart operations, I believe, at that time, as a result of the obesity and eating, and also I had developed onset diabetes at that point, and I was depressed, of course. So I couldn't do much. I didn't, you know, exercise. The word just made me sick. Exercise. So the best I could do is I got my dog. And I walked around the block, and that was it. That's the condition I was in 17 years ago. So I got home. I sat on the couch. I was sweating profusely. But an interesting thing happened as a result of taking that action. I felt better. I started to feel better. And so I called him and told him I walked around the block and said, okay, that's fine. Keep it up. So pretty soon, I'm walking around the block and, I'm working the steps with my OA sponsor and, of course, I'm reducing this symptom, and that's all it is, a symptom of overweight, and I'm addressing this disease of compulsive overeating. And so I went back to my sponsor. He says, well, I'm going to hook you up with another guy named Chris who goes over by your house and he runs around the track every morning at 5 o'clock, he goes and he runs around the clock. Well, I didn't want to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I certainly couldn't run either. But I said, well, maybe I'll just go over and meet him. And he said, fine, you do that. So I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I go over to the high schools in the track, and this Chris would be running around this track like a chicken with his head cut off. I had no idea why he was doing it. And Chris says, well, why don't you just, you're obviously not going to run, so why don't you just try walking around the track while I'm running? We'll kind of hook up every morning. I said, well, okay, I'll try it, Chris, but I don't know that I can actually walk all the way around the track. And so, sure enough, I was able to walk all the way around the track. And, of course, I reported back to my sponsor, boy, I walked all the way around the track this morning. And, I met Chris, and pretty soon I'm meeting him every morning, and we're walking around. I'm walking around the track 4 or 5 times, and, my life is getting better. I mean, I didn't really know it, but my life was getting better. And pretty soon, after a while, well, this Chris guy says, because he says, listen, you've been coming here every morning at 5 o'clock, walking around this track. Why don't you try running around the track once? And I said, listen, Chris, you don't understand. I've got heart problems, not to mention the diabetes and the depression. That my cardiologist would never, ever approve of me running. And he says, well, why don't you ask him? And I said, I will. I'm going to ask him. So my cardiologist, who I still talk to today, this guy named Greg Thomas, actually down in Long Beach. And so I had an appointment to see him, and we were in the office. And I said, Greg, I got this other doctor that started me in this exercise deal, which I don't like. And now this other guy is asking me if I should maybe try running around the track. I'm going and I'm walking, but he wants me to try to run around the track. And I told that Chris guy, I said, you would never, ever approve of me running. And this Greg took one look at me, and he said, Jim, considering the condition you're in, anything is worth the risk. So back to the track I go the next morning, and I said, well, Chris, I talked to the doctor. He said, I guess it's okay if I try to run. I don't have a heart attack here on the way around. But so sure enough, I ran all the way around that track, and I couldn't believe it. Neither could my sponsor. And so I embarked on this running thing, gee, my health is getting better. My cardiologist, he can't believe what you guys have done with me. All my vital signs are getting better, and one day, Chris can't run with me anymore. So I'm left alone. I don't do too well alone. I kind of need somebody to hold my hand. And so I went back to the old doctor guy, and I said, this Chris guy has got to change his schedule. Now I got to get up at 5 o'clock by myself and go over to that damn track and run around there by myself, and I don't want to do it, and it's not going to be any fun. And he said, I'll tell you what. He said, I got an idea for you. He says, why don't you make that part of your 11th step? In other words, we have an action for every, our steps are a bunch of actions, okay? He said, that can be your action to go with the 11th step. And for those of you who are new, the 11th step is that we seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with our higher power, and we're praying for knowledge of His will for us and asking for the power to carry that out. Very simple. And I said, okay, I guess I can do that, So sure enough, I go to the track, I'm running around, I'm doing my 11th step, and it just worked wonderfully. It worked wonderfully. I had no problem with it at all. And I stopped calling it exercise and running, and I started calling it spiritual activity because it was made it easier for me to do. And it just worked wonderfully. And so I got in this routine of sharing this action with my higher power relative to one of our steps, which all our steps have an action that go with them. So anyway, it worked good, and I'm still running today. And I'm not a marathon runner or anything. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I've run 10Ks, and probably now, I'm getting older. I probably run a 5K if my life depended on it. But I run consistently. I go to the gym. I ride my bike. I do a lot of activities, and they're all part of that 11th step, which is the big payoff here. That's the big payoff here is that 11th step, I think. This conscious contact with a higher power, reliance on a higher power. Pretty soon, I'm not taking any medication for the heart things anymore. I'm not taking any medication for the onset diabetes that has gone into some kind of a remission. Thank you. And, of course, the depression is much better. Much better. I've had a spiritual change as a result of the steps. Now, I know that OA has a definition of abstinence, and I'm not in disagreement with it or anything of the sort. But as a result of this process, I understand today, and I believe, at least myself, I don't know what you believe, but that abstinence has very little to do with food or weight loss. It's a spiritual condition that we get by working the steps. Now, certainly, I have a food plan. I've had a food plan since day one. A food plan, and my abiding by it, is not abstinence. That's called a diet. That's called a diet. And if a diet had worked, I wouldn't have to come to OA, but it didn't. So what's different about a food plan and a diet? Well, very simply, this is that a food plan has spiritual content. It's part of a spiritual program. And so I'm able to adapt it into this program, and that I now have a food plan that is committed to my sponsor and to my higher power, and I adapt it as part of a spiritual recovery program. And so that's a tool for me now to step into this spiritual condition of abstinence that I get by working the steps. Okay? Now, as in the 12th step, it says that having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Well, if I've had a spiritual awakening, I'm in a spiritual condition, and so abstinence to me is a spiritual condition. Okay, I'm in that 12th step. I'm in that spiritual condition, and now the weight loss takes care of itself. That was just a symptom of what was wrong with me. And anybody can figure out if you're a compulsive overeater and you stop compulsively overeating, you're going to lose X amount of pounds. That's very simple. But weight loss is not abstinence. Weight loss for me was a result of being abstinent, being in a spiritual condition. And the food plan was a tool to get abstinence. So the focus is always on the abstinence, the spiritual condition through the steps. So, I'd like to leave a little time for questions. I don't know if you have any questions. I know there's a lot of new people. Here I am now, reflecting back. I'm 72 years old now. I'm in better health than I was when I was 35, believe it or not. I'm in better health than I was. I couldn't run a 5K when I was 35. As I say, the medication, I take a couple of medications just for plaque but nothing specifically for the heart problem and nothing for diabetes. So I feel that as a result of being in OA now and being 72, which is just a number, but I'm getting younger rather than older because I'm able to do things today I couldn't do when I was half this age. And so the only explanation I have is for these rooms, for these steps, for my sponsor, for my higher power. I have this life, this freedom, where I'm at peace in this world. I have serenity in my life. I have relationship with what's her name? And I don't have to go out of, I don't have to compulsively overeat. I have this peace and serenity, and I don't have to compulsively overeat. Isn't that amazing? I believe wholeheartedly that compulsive overeating is a disease, and a disease is a medical problem. A medical problem, not a psychological or a psychiatric problem. It's not an allergy. It's not a spiritual malady. It's none of those things. It's a medical problem. Now, certainly it creates those other problems, but at its core, it's purely a medical problem. And so this solution to me is very easy to explain to people. This OA offers me a spiritual solution to a medical problem. Very simple, very simple. And so I can forget my emotions. And my psychological or psychiatric problems, and address the idea that compulsive overeating works for me, and it doesn't for normal people. It works for me. Something's different about me. And so that's what my focus is on, is recovery from that disease. And so anyway, I'm very happy to be here tonight. As they say, I'm dealing with the loss of my son, but there's no place I would rather be than here with you this evening. So thank you. And then I hope we have some questions. I'd like to see what you think. Well, yeah, you're asking me how I define my higher power?
Or how you experience your higher
power. Well, that part of my talk about the 11th step was that I not only do I, by the way, that's a good question, very good question. I'm going to think of an answer in a minute. But anyway, I invite my higher power to share my meals with me. That's also part of my program. I invite him to share my meals with me because he's my partner, my third step. I committed my food plan to him, so he's my partner. And so if he's going to be my partner, I have come and join me in this wonderful meal. Thanks for this healthy food. And no problem. I mean, I don't have any white knuckling it or anything of the sort. It's a very pleasurable experience, and I invite my higher power into that and make him a part of that meal three times a day. But then as time went on, I thought that works wonderfully. That three spiritual experiences a day, inviting my higher power to share my meals with me and to have that time with him. And also my exercise and running. But I thought, you know, those in-betweens, you know, I have three moderate meals a day, nothing in between. I forgot about the in-betweens, which become now so important to me in this sense that may be where I need the connection with a higher power more than I do when I'm eating. And so I constantly have a game of whatever's going on to ask him to share it with me. Come and share this problem with me. And he always is willing to do it. And he's always willing to join me in my meals. I don't know if he's a compulsive overeater, but I can tell you this, he's never missed a meal in 17 years. And so that has worked well for me. But that experience of inviting my higher power into my life, in all aspects of my life, really works well for me and gives me a sense, a spiritual sense in this life. So that's good as I can explain it. Yes.
Hi. What
would you say to someone like
who's new, how to start defining God, how to start where you don't believe, how to activate? Do you have any gems?
No, I don't. I guess that's a personal thing, and the idea of accepting that idea and envisioning having a vision of your own higher power is a very personal thing for me anyway. I'm not sure my higher power is like anybody else's in this room, and I certainly wouldn't advise anybody I sponsor. I mean, they have to find their own vision of a higher power, and in step two, I've come to believe that a power greater than myself, that is simply put as it can possibly be. It just has to be a power greater than myself. That's it. And then I can
go on from there and make my higher power anything I want and join him in anything I want. So that would be that's my experience with that second step. Okay. Yes, sir. How are you?
And I'm back from a relapse of about 3 or 4 years. And it sounds from your story that you never relapsed, but perhaps you have found sees you did. What a suggestion can you make me to stick this time with it and not to go out or not to put it in the house? Is there anything you can tell me?
Well, I can only tell you my experience. And although I haven't had a relapse in this program per se, I have certainly seen a lot of people relapse. In my experience, what it always starts, it's not the food at all. It's an emotional relapse that starts the progression. My emotions, I just can't deal with them. I've got to find some relief. I'm in withdrawal. It's a very simple medical thing. I'm addicted to something, and I go into withdrawal. And when I get into withdrawal, my emotions go haywire, and I'm looking for a solution. And so the idea of having the steps to resolve those conflicts, to resolve those emotional conflicts, I can stay absent. I can stay absent. But I have to always turn it over to my higher power, my sponsor, the program, and be in meetings, and then I can resolve those conflicts. So I'm out of time. Thank you very much. Thank you.